You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Final hour on this Tuesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We'll check in with Chris Webber, get his thoughts on the new and improved Brooklyn Nets. Last night, picked up the win against Milwaukee, still waiting for the much-anticipated return of Kyrie Irving. Expected to be Wednesday night against the pesky Cleveland Cavaliers. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DP Show. I think we're under the impression because Patrick Mahomes didn't suffer a concussion, therefore you can exhale. If it's nerve damage in his neck, this might be something that stays with him for a while. This isn't you just go through concussion protocol, then you're cleared. He might be more vulnerable here. And we don't know the extent of this, but I think they quickly realized he didn't have a concussion, but he certainly looked like he had suffered a concussion. He's still in concussion protocol, by the way, going through all the tests. But as it stands right now, Tuesday at 11 o'clock Eastern, we're expecting Patrick Mahomes to be playing in this game this weekend against the Buffalo Bills. Did we check on the weather? It feels like Lambeau is getting snow. I know Bruce Arians said we're going to prepare for the cold weather. I don't know how you prepare for the cold weather in Tampa. Do you turn up the air conditioning? Yes, Paul.
I got 28 degrees at kickoff in Lambeau, Green Bay, and a 40%, actually only a 25% chance, 50% chance of precipitation. That's the local broadcast. Okay. Because they have, 50% right now.
Yeah. What about Kansas City, McLovin?
I think Kansas City is 31 and not snowing, but that's off memory. I have to check.
All right. Here's Bruce Arians, the Buccaneers head coach, on prepping for cold weather at Lambeau.
It's just a matter of staying warm on the sidelines, because when you're out there on the field, I don't know if anybody, every time I played in Green Bay, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Buffalo, nobody was cold out on the field. It's more mental than staying warm on the sideline. I've got all that technology now with heaters and everything else. So it's really not, it's different, but it's not that big difference.
Well, also, you know, players will tell you that, you know, hey, we play well in the cold weather. They don't like playing in cold weather, but you have to convince yourself that you play better. Like, that's our home field advantage. I go back to the coldest game in NFL history that I went to when the Chargers came to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. And the wind chill factor was about 50 degrees below zero. And if you could have said to the Chargers, guys, you're going to lose in a respectable manner, but you can turn around, get on the bus, get on the plane, and fly home, I'm sure there are a few Chargers who would have taken up the officials on that, because the Bengals ended up winning that game, the coldest game in NFL history. And the lineman came out with short sleeves on. When I saw that, I go, man, the Bengals are bad bleeps, man. They got their short sleeves on. And I asked Anthony Munoz about that. He goes, no, it was cold. You know, like, we were stupid, but we wanted to let the Chargers know, a warm weather team, hey, welcome to Cincinnati. This feels pretty balmy here. I saw this story. I wanted to bring in Jeff Passan. The New York Mets general manager Jared Porter acknowledges sending explicit images to a female reporter when he worked for the Chicago Cubs. I believe this is back in 2016. He was hired by the Mets to be their general manager. He is no longer the Mets general manager because he has been fired. And Jeff Passan from the Mothership, who covers baseball, joining us on the program. When did you get first word about this, something that was done back in 2016 with the Cubs?
Me personally, Dan, was very recently.
Okay.
But my colleague, Mina Kimes, first was given the text back in 2017, December of 2017, and went and met with a woman and talked with her about possibly doing a story on this. At the time, she was not ready for that. She was still working in the journalism industry, and she was afraid that the blowback from a story being published was going to significantly harm her career. She is no longer in journalism. And as she saw Jared Porter's ascent to general manager of the Mets, it hit her. There's a person who did something to me, and his career is on an upward trajectory. I'm the victim in this situation, and I now don't have my dream job anymore. Why is this fair? Why is this okay? Why is this something?
When did the Mets know, Jeff?
From all I can gather, Dan, the Mets found out when we told them that we were going to be publishing this story yesterday, that they did not know about this beforehand, that it caught them off guard. Inside of baseball, let's go back to 2016 with the Cubs. There was one other person in the Cubs organization at the time who found out about it afterward, because the woman had gone to her employer and someone at her employer had called up somebody with the Cubs who that person knew. And that person with whom we spoke yesterday said that he was trying to essentially be a go-between to bring the woman and Porter together to have some kind of a resolution for this. That never happened. She was considering legal action at the time. She says that he was pushing her not to pursue legal action.
How many text messages did he send this woman?
In total, it was 150 or so. The majority of those were at the beginning. They had met at Yankee Stadium, and she thought, hey, you know, we're going to talk baseball. He's going to be a source. That's what reporters do, trying to cultivate sources. But very quickly, the messages from Porter went beyond the normal source relationship to a point where he was asking her out, trying to get her to come and visit him in different places across the country. And after he sent one particular picture, which he says wasn't him, but was of a man laying on a bed with a bulge in his pants, she stopped responding. After she stopped responding, there were more than 60 texts from Jared Porter that culminated with a picture of a naked penis. And that is where we are. And that is ultimately, I think, what got him fired, not just the lewd image itself, but the fact that it came after she had not responded to 60 plus texts from him.
What's the reaction from the new owner, Steve Cohen?
I mean, you saw it this morning. He got fired before 8 a.m. Eastern, and this was a story that was published about 11 o'clock last night. So it didn't even take half a day. And Steve Cohen, if you remember, in his initial press conference, said, we want this to be an organization of integrity. And he referenced that again this morning in the tweet in which he announced the firing publicly. He said, I want to run this organization with integrity, and we could not do that with him in charge.
And this had been a pretty good offseason with the trade getting Lindor from Cleveland. They helped their pitching staff here. And I go back to last year with Carlos Beltran. Does Beltran get another chance here, Jeff?
Well, A.J. Hinch has gotten another chance.
I know. That's why.
Alex Cora has gotten another chance. It stands to reason that Carlos Beltran would get another chance, considering the other two who have.
Yeah, just trying to figure that out, because that was with the Mets as well. Are they a cursed organization? Do we look at them sort of the way we do the Knicks?
Dan, I'm from Cleveland, so if anyone's going to believe in curses, it's me. And I still do not believe in the idea of a cursed organization. What I do believe in is the idea of culture, and that culture can perpetuate itself through a place and metastasize, and that getting rid of that cancer inside of an organization can take a really long time, but it's possible. Like, let's not look past the idea that the New York Mets can one day become a functional organization if things are done correctly. And something like this, you know, when you make a mistake, you can either double down on it, or you can acknowledge quickly that it was a mistake. And I think the Mets did so in this case, and that's a good first step in righting the error of your ways.
Good to visit with you. You and Mina did a great job, a deep dive on this at ESPN.com. Thank you, Jeff.
My pleasure, Dan.
That's,
thanks.
Jeff Passan, ESPN Baseball Insider. Yeah, I wonder if Beltran's going to get a chance. By all accounts, brilliant baseball guy and probably a borderline Hall of Famer. But what happened with the Astros when he was still a player with the cheating scandal, and once the Mets found out about it, they'd already hired him, and then they fired him. Now you bring in a GM, and like, I don't know who is doing background checks here, but if you're going to bring in a GM, how deep a dive is your background check on something like this? But you're sending over 150 text messages, and she didn't respond, which was amazing. And then story comes out last night at 11 o'clock, and he's fired before 8 a.m. this morning. Yeah, Paul.
You know, if you think about it from the Mets ownership standpoint, that's always the how a story stays alive is when owners back their guy or don't fire him. Or we're going to look into this and see what we can glean from the investigation. Then the story lasts for weeks, especially in New York City with the back page. You can imagine what they would do.
Yeah, I think that the reason why it was swift, because they had so much information here. And if you look at the ESPN report, they've done a great job in bringing all that information to light. But the fact that this was going on, and then you hire this guy, and all of a sudden it comes to light. And, you know, and Mina Kimes, credit to her, because, you know, she reached out to this reporter who's no longer a reporter, and then probably reached out again when this woman decided to go back to whatever country she's from. She is not from the United States. And then probably said, do you still want to tell this story? And she eventually came forward. But they have done a good job in the offseason, you know, strengthen their starting rotation. They get Lindor, who's a elite player, top 10 player right now. It's weird to talk baseball. Even though we would normally be getting ready to gear up, when you get to February, you start thinking about spring training. And I probably went to spring training 30-plus years, maybe. I'd go to Arizona. I went to Florida a couple times, but I always tell people, you know, if you get that chance, go to Scottsdale. Stay in Scottsdale, and you can go within an hour, you can see, you know, 7-8 teams. And then all the games that are played, and it's a wonderful atmosphere. And Scottsdale's wonderful. A lot of hotels there, restaurants there when things get back to normal. But baseball has sort of been, there's no buzz. Like, can you think of any other, aside from this, that the trade with Lindor was pretty big. And the fact that Cleveland is pretty much going to go bargain basement here, feels like, with what they're doing. But you haven't heard too much. Even with, like, the Yankees, you normally would hear something in the offseason. Yeah, McClellan.
Yeah, did they trade for or sign Corey Kluber, and it was barely even a headline.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a two-time Cy Young winner. But, you know, I thought LeMahieu was, like, a big signing for them, that they, you know, one of the great hitters in the game. Yeah, Paul.
The Cubs have been able to erase every remnant of the 2016 team, just about.
Yeah.
I think it's Rizzo and nobody.
Yeah, including the person who was working for them, who got fired by the Mets.
Yes.
Yes, McLevin.
Do you think it's possibly COVID-related, like, in the sense that, like, you know, the NBA came back and nobody even noticed? They were just so happy the bubble worked that people aren't even – I think it's hard to get excited about a season that you don't know what the shape or form is going to be, if they're fans, if they're going to be able to play continuously, like
– Yeah, I'd say COVID has put a damper on all of these sports. When you think about college basketball, should we be trying to play March Madness? Because it does live up to the name this year. I mean, this is madness. There's so much money involved here. So much money. But even, like, Kansas against Baylor, like, I didn't know it was going to be played. Like, I just assumed that these games, there's a chance they'll be canceled. And, you know, Baylor ended up winning last night. But you start to, I'm not surprised when a college game is canceled. Not at all. And now NBA games are being canceled because you don't even have players on the roster. We went from Rudy Gobert testing positive and shutting down the entire sport to, yeah, we'll just put it off for another day. Hey, you only have 7 players. Nah, you need one more. We've come a long way since last March. I don't know if we've come a long way in a good way with everything that's involved in this. Yeah, McClellan.
A few prominent analysts have said that athletes should get COVID vaccines before everybody.
Well, Charles Barkley said
Barkley.
This.
And I get that for the public service of, I mean, I know it's a weird public service, but there's an argument to be made. It's not that many people.
Yeah, but
it?
Charles said because they pay so much in taxes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, that's that's the caveat where you go, Charles, no. You don't want to be on this hill.
What about there are a lot of jobs dependent on them? I mean, you could make
I get it. It's just when you start to pick and choose and you say, well, you pay more taxes. The frontline workers, those are the people who need to get there first. Older people need to get there first. Compromised people need to get there first. The NBA has some of the safest protocols. They've had this. Like, they're so far ahead of everybody else to begin with. And the NFL players, they're tested every day. They're tested all the time. They're quarantined. There's safety bubbles that they have. They're doing their best. We don't have that. So they're already getting preferential treatment that I can't go, you pay a lot of taxes. Now, if you say LeBron's going to get vaccinated, and that way we show communities, you should get vaccinated. LeBron is doing it. Steph Curry is doing it. The Greek Freak is doing it. Okay, I understand that. But I don't follow Charles' logic to say, you guys pay so much in taxes, therefore you guys should be getting vaccinated before somebody else. I think that's careless to say that. Yeah, Paul.
It is an interesting topic because, like you said, the NBA players, you want to make a statement and get it out to the community, but they have more opportunities to be safe than the average worker, the average family person.
Yes, yeah. And that's all I'm saying. The right people need to get vaccinated first. And those are the people who actually put their lives on the line. No question. Those people first. And the people who are compromised, those people who are older in nursing homes, those people as well. But the people who are taking care of the people need to be first in line. We'll take a break. C. Webb will join us coming up, get his thoughts, his impressions, his early impression, first impression of, the second impression, because they played two games with the Brooklyn Nets. And how the heck did the Lakers blow a 14-point fourth quarter lead to the Golden State Warriors? 18 after the hour. Back after this on the Dan Patrick Show. You know, you come in and you got a lot of energy. And probably the biggest reason is quality sleep. When's the last time you got a great night's sleep? Because you're going to get energy. You're going to be able to recover. It's a natural immunity booster. You want to have a balanced life. You want to be in great shape, health, all of those things. Since the pandemic began, the Sleep IQ sleepers, this is Sleep Number, folks, have gained an average of 53 hours of restful sleep compared to last year. A big factor for this was people could sleep later since they didn't have to commute. But there are certain things that you need to understand. When you get that great night's sleep, don't drink caffeine past 3 o'clock. Keep your bedroom at a cool temperature. Optimum sleep temperature is the low mid-60s. These are things that Sleep Number helps you with. And then, on top of that, they help you with a sale that's always going on. Proven quality sleep, life-changing sleep. Right now, save $1,000 on the Queen Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed. For a limited time only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com/Patrick, Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Go the extra mile. Your very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. You could win in Fox Sports Radio's Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. To enter, get official rules, visit foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com by January 24th, Mercedes-Benz vans. Chris Webber, NBA on TNT analyst. He was on the call for the Bucks and the Nets last night on TNT. Next game, Lakers-Bucks Thursday night at 7:30 Eastern, also on TNT. Oh, look at you, Mr. Milwaukee Buck, with your Milwaukee Bucks T-shirt on. Did you pay for that?
No, I got so many. I can wear all the teams. I guess I was. I used to say I wasn't superstitious, but I would never wear other teams. Now, I take all the swag they give me. I work out in it. So,
were the Pistons your favorite team growing up?
Yeah, by far. It was the Pistons, and then it was the Pistons and the Lakers, Magic being from Michigan, and then I hated Chicago and the Celtics so much, but I really loved secretly. So it was It was the tangle web back then.
Well, why did you hate Boston?
Well, remember, you know, back then you had to go through certain teams. So back then, the Pistons had to go through Boston. So, you know, I grew up hating Dick Stockton because every time his voice came on, it reminded me of the Celtics games. You know, you think the commentators have something to do with the game. And so remember Isaiah turning it over? That's a crazy story. Well, we got whoopings that night because we went crazy running through the house when Isaiah turned it over. And then we beat the Celtics, got through them. You know, that's when you see Kevin McHale giving Isaiah the pound, telling him, you better go win it, you better go win it. Isaiah hurts himself, gets 44 in the finals. We lose to the Lakers. Good job, Magic. And then we beat them next two. So I hated the Celtics because we had to go through them. And, of course, just the Bulls just because.
Okay, but what was that like when you're watching Isaiah throw the ball in? Just get the ball in, and you're going to beat the Celtics. And Larry Bird, slowest guy on the floor, comes out of nowhere and steals the ball, hits DJ for the layup.
It was crazy. When I played the Celtics the first time, I remember having like Spree and those guys pick me up. And seriously, like, I know Kyrie takes the sage and does that around, but I really thought it had to be like a leprechaun on top of those rims. I really thought back then it was something with the parquet floor that it was magic. And so I just felt like, wow, come on, out of all, you know, the times that this could happen. So that was one of the worst moments for me as a basketball fan.
Were you a Lions fan too growing up?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
I remember going to a friend's wedding and all these Lions, you know, were there. And so, yeah, it was I was a big Lions fan, still am, you know, Billy Sims and, you know, other players that we've had during that time, even though we're most famously known for being the only team where two Hall of Famers, generational talents retired early rather than what they left.
Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders, they decided, yeah. You know what, I'd rather not play. Instead of playing with the Lions, I'd rather not play at all.
Yeah, but you know what, I'll be quick, but I'm a Lions fan still to this day. But in 99, I think it was the year Cleveland got their team back.
Yeah.
I was just mad at the Lions. I don't know if we had gone on 16 then or whatever, but I'm just a frustrated fan. I think they take our love for granted. But anyway, I became a Cleveland Browns fan that day as my second team because I couldn't just jump on a bandwagon. So it's fun watching them do it, you know, what they did this year.
He's C-Webb, and he was on the call with the Bucks and Nets last night. What are the Nets doing so far without Kyrie, with James and Katie that surprised you?
It doesn't surprise. Nothing surprised me with this team, Dan. You know, I think 50 things can be true at one time. You know, Harden left unceremoniously. He got he gained weight. He did all those things, but he's still one of the best players. And I still believe D'Antoni is responsible for how Harden played there. D'Antoni told me personally that he believed that, remember how you would throw the ball in the Shaq would wait and throw it back out, and maybe that play took 15 seconds? He believed that Harden was doing that from the top of the key as a post-up player, and that, okay, Dan, if you're ready to shoot, okay, we'll throw it back. Now I'm going to dribble and find one of you. That's what he believed was his post play. I don't believe Harden, I believe he liked playing like that, but he can play so much more efficiently. And by those guys being friends, I put a lot of it on mentality. But by those guys being friends, I expect them to share the ball. And I believe Harden knows that Durant is the best player in the NBA. And, you know, he defers at times. So,
do you think Durant's the best player in the NBA?
I think he's the best. He'd have to be top two. You know, I know that offensively that it's no one in the game like him, that we've ever seen. And I think his teammates know that. I think that Durant learned how to play a different style, playing for Coach Kerr and with those players. I think he learned to trust players playing at Golden State, meaning like if you're in the right place, just make the right play, because he just plays so much more calm and effortlessly, and so he lets the game come to him. So and Nash is their coach. You know, I said this last night. You know, Dan, you may remember this, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in my opinion, and I believe this with all my heart, Nash dribbled the ball more than Harden. It was just the way that he did it. It was just he dribbled in a circle all the way around up under the basket, but he would just make great plays.
But so he shot less, though, Chris.
Yeah, yeah, he did. But I'm not talking about shooting. I'm talking about ball handling. And so I think that having a guy like Nash, because we used to want Nash to shoot more so that other guys wouldn't get involved. So Nash is brilliant. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that the game has changed, and Nash is part of the reason why Harden is successful. And by the way, D'Antoni is on that bench that coached Nash that way, and then vice versa. And so I believe that, you know, if this is their style of play, I believe Nash is a great guy to talk to Harden about how to do it.
Well, I think with Harden, we look at it as he just pounds the ball and then he's going to take his shot. Nash would dribble, and you're right, he was almost like Wayne Gretzky. Gretzky used to go behind the net, and then he would try to set up his teammates. Nash was a pass first, and James is a shoot first, shoot second, pass third. And I think people look at it and they don't like sort of he's a ball hog. I don't think people looked at Nash as a ball hog as much as they do James. But I still say, why is it that Harden can get 11 assists, but Kyrie can't? Kyrie's not a great passer, Chris.
You know, when I played with Allen Iverson, a lot of people used to say that he was selfish. And he definitely is looking for his shot. That's the way Allen was made and programmed to be. Kyrie is so skilled at scoring and getting to where he wants. And his size, I think, when you trap, prohibits. Now, should he be a better passer? Should he get more assists? Yes, I agree with you. And I go back to Nash. It's not about – I don't want in any way want to make Nash seem selfish. He's one of the most selfless players ever. But when you have two guys on the side of you, you have to trust them. And I've seen Harden do that when he led their team in assists when he was the third guy coming off with he and Westbrook. So I trust their relationship. And when you play with greats, you feel like, okay, I can get mine. What is the question? I do think it's Kyrie, and can he fit – can he get others involved? But if you have Harden at the point guard, why can't Kyrie be the two offensively? Meaning, because I agree, Dan, he should get more assists. So I agree with you. But if he's not going to, why wouldn't you let them get that same amount and just do it from a two position and score and then keep the ball in Harden's hands?
Yeah, he's this enigma. He's a fascinating guy. And you were on the set with Uncle Drew, so you spent time with him. Like, even though you spent time with him, do you understand? Do you know Kyrie Irving or feel like you do?
No, I don't know Kyrie. No, I don't know him. I don't know him at all. I know his father a little bit through friends of mine, like Rod Strickland and others. I know his father was a heck of a hooper and a great, great man. But I don't. And I think because I'm in the movie, people think that I can give insight. You know, I don't. This is a different generation. This is a different day. And so my thing is, you know, as a commentator, to hold him accountable and then to balance it with the things I don't know. And so that's why, like, so in my day, I can only say this, that in my day, if I would have played in Washington, I wanted to play with Sprewell. I wanted them to trade him for Calvert Chaney straight up. What's up, Calvert? I love you. but I played Spree, and at that time, I knew the Spree was intent on being Jordan. Defensively, I mean, this guy was incredible. He was a friend, but he was incredible. And I remember going, I want to play with him. And I know that if I were to play with him, I would have played better. Whether I had more shots or less shots, I know that, you know, whatever the situation, and no disrespect to Calvert, I just meant because of our relationship. I think friends hold each other to a higher standard, depending on what type of friends you have. I think Durant does that as the alpha male in this situation. And I believe that they had to talk to each other about it. And so if you, as friends, get in the room and you talk about it, make a commitment, say we're going to win, you know, make a toast, have a drunk talk, oh, buddy, we're going to do it. You got to stick to it. And no coaching can make you sacrifice, no friends, no family. It's the commitment you made to each other. And that's the only thing that I rely on. That's why I think KG worked when he got to Boston. That's why I think Rasheed worked when he got to Detroit. And many people didn't think it would, but they didn't know the personal relationships. And so, Dan, that's all I can put it on, because I don't know Kyrie at all.
Would you want to play with Kyrie?
Would I want to play? If I could play today and be healthy and go back in time and play today with who I was, I would, yes, I would want to play with him because I was a pick and roll player. And as long as you give me the ball off the pick and roll, I could do, you know, whatever I need to do.
He now, might not give me the ball off the pick and roll.
Well, you know, we'd have to find out. But, so, very, very honest, if I could play today, you know, or if I could play in my lifetime, the three guys I would have wanted to play with are probably Magic, Nash, and LeBron. Because I was a big guy, and those guys find you.
No Jordan.
I would have loved, of course, I would have loved to play with Jordan. I just meant, you know, you're going to touch the ball a lot. With Jordan, I would have just been rebounding.
you would have been Horace Grant.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, Horace got some rings, so yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, you might have been Will Perdue. I don't know. But, you know, I was watching the Lakers last night. They're up 14 in the fourth quarter. Now, I know it's a game in January here, Chris. How do you blow a 14-point lead against Golden State at home?
Because Golden State has a chip on their shoulder. I think from Kerr enjoying coaching probably more than ever to Curry coming back. I mean, you see the shots that Curry wants. You know, guys, what I really love, guys are really humble off the court, but their alter egos are on the court, and Curry is a little jerk on the court. He's the like 6th, 7th grade, and he used to play tag in all the games. The little fellas always won because you couldn't catch him and you were just mad. And that's Curry. He's shooting threes. He's getting other guys going. Draymond, I mean, it's a time for them to really show who they are in the midst of this. And so it didn't surprise me. It really didn't surprise me that Golden State did that. It would surprise me if other teams, but when you have Curry and those boys, man, you better bring your hard hat every night.
But could Curry act this way back when you played?
No, no. I just remember, you know, Karl Malone, I think 22 stitches to Isaiah. I just remember, you know, Oakley, other guys. It was just a different day. I mean, you know, I had to change the way I acted after, you know, two or three seasons because it's just not worth it. You know what I mean? You know, Cummings has nothing to lose. There's 2 years left in his career and he's on the bench. Why try to three seasons down the left? Well, I mean, why?
Wait, who do you still owe something to?
As far as what do you mean?
They did something to you, but you didn't want to lose game checks and get back at them. Do you have a grudge towards anybody?
No, I would say though that Terry Cummings is the one loss that I took. You know, I wanted to fight Xavier McDaniel. I wanted to, you know, back then it was WWF. You coming into the league, you know, and so no. But Terry Cummings, I would say, is the one guy.
But he's a minister, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. So how about this? You know, your grandfather. You ever see your grandfather get mad and give you that look, and he doesn't say anything?
Yeah.
And you get more scared. That he's a minister and it's like, oh my God, he made a commitment to God. Whatever he beat my ass right now. So no, that was my rookie year. He pulled me out the air gently, but he grabbed me and he wouldn't let me go and he said, no, don't do that anymore. And Billy and those guys, they didn't come up and, like, you know, talk. They looked at him like, no, he's the crazy one. That's what I learned. Never fight a guy that cries before the fight. And then guys that are real calm like him, just leave him alone.
Wait, the guys who cry before the fight?
Oh, you never, oh, damn. Never fight a guy that starts crying before a fight.
Wait, who started crying before a fight?
I've seen it before. I bet some people out there have seen it before. Call in, let Dan know. Like, didn't Lennox Lewis lose to a guy? Was that McCall crying before a fight? It was
Oliver
a professional fight.
Oliver McCall?
Yeah, he started crying. But, yeah, I've seen bullies get knocked out, maybe two in my lifetime, when the guy getting bullied just started crying. That's when you just know he has nothing to lose. You don't want to fight a guy with nothing to lose.
But you know, like Charles Oakley wouldn't start crying before he would pummel somebody.
No, he might just start smacking himself. Or hitting the head.
Terry Cummings is a minister. That's what I find amazing, that he's supposed to be a God-fearing, peaceful man, Chris.
Yeah, I would tell his congregation to check his
stuff. You better behave. You better donate money. Put it in the collection plate there. Or Hey, great to catch up with you, as always. We appreciate you. Your stories is, and Chris will be on the Bucks-Lakers call Thursday night, 7:30 Eastern on TNT. C-Web, always great to catch up. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, brother. We'll take a break. Last call for phone calls. He's a great guest. I enjoy talking to him. Like, that's the kind of guy I'd love to go to dinner with and just let him talk. I don't know if he drinks, but hopefully he does, and then I get more stories out of him. But I go back to when it was Patrick Ewing who sat down with Mark Jackson and John Barry, and I just let him talk, and all you want to do is listen. And a lot of the stuff is stuff that cannot be repeated in opinions or what happened in certain situations, but these guys, Chris has more stories than he knows. Because anytime I bring something up, and it always feels like he'll go, oh, yeah. Yeah, I wanted Calbert Chaney traded for Latrell Sprewell. What up? What up, Calvin? Yes, Todd.
It's always a good sign when the guest says, can I tell you something? Or let me tell you something. Oh, something good's about to happen.
I know. My favorite moment in an interview is when somebody says, you know, I probably shouldn't say this. Or, you know, that reminds me of a story that I haven't told before. Oh, all right. Please. Take a break. We'll close up shop after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Oh, just when you thought Deflategate was over with. Not so fast. We'll have that conversation coming up tomorrow. If I, here's the headline. Bob Kravitz worked for the Indianapolis Star, and he's the one that broke Deflategate story. This is after Patriots roughed up the Colts 45-7 on January 19th, 2015. And not long after that, Deflategate came to light at around 12:55 a.m. And Bob Kravitz has written a column that says, was I wrong about Deflategate? Question mark. 6 years later, it's still complicated. Seton about his head about exploded when he saw this is right before the show.
Please.
And I said this, and Seton goes, I can't read this during the show. I said, no, you don't want to read this during the show. But Bob Kravitz, 6 years later, maybe an epiphany that maybe he didn't get the story right with Deflategate. Are you going to be okay with this guest tomorrow, Bob Kravitz?
Oh, he's coming on?
Yes.
Oh, God. So what? So he could be like, look, no, I still think they cheated. I still think I got everything right. Just the one thing, maybe, kernel of a doubt.
Well, I also think what didn't help the situation was Chris Mortensen. I think he came out and said a legal source said to him that 11 of the 12 footballs were deflated. And it turns out that that wasn't the case, that Mort had bad information.
I do like that Bob Kravitz in the article says that somebody with the NFL was acting inappropriately and leaking. Well, Bates, he's implying that somebody with the league was leaking bad information. That's tasty.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Like, I wonder if Brady could ever sue the commissioner, the NFL. Because if you have somebody in there who was spreading this information and knew it was wrong. It'd be interesting if you got the commissioner up there on the witness stand. Not on his witness stand at the NFL home office, but an actual witness stand. Yeah, McLevin?
Then you get the deflator under oath, too.
Deflator.
You haven't heard anything from that dude.
Yeah.
He really was trying to just lose weight all along.
Chris Mortensen tweeted the next day, 11 of the 12 Patriots footballs came in at 2 pounds per square inch lighter than the rules allow. Bob Kravitz says, I had no reason to doubt Mort or his source. It was the one time he got it wrong because he was provided with bad information. Somebody at the NFL was acting in bad faith. How about that one? This was 1 out of 1,000. So Bob Kravitz is saying, there's somebody in the home office who was leaking some bad information here.
That's fun.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right, so what Bob Kravitz on? Yeah, Paul?
We can attest that Tom Brady has a strong legal team.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. We got a cease and desist. It's never just a cease. It's never just desist. But we got a cease and desist from his law firm with our Tampa Bay t-shirt. Why? It sounds like cease and desist are the same thing, McLovin.
Yeah, it sure does. Cease means stop, and desist means stop.
You really better stop.
There might be something here. I don't know.
Well, you're the guy who was going to be a lawyer.
Oh, I know. My days as a paralegal.
Yeah, paralegal.
Yeah, I didn't get into that.
Yeah, cease and desist. Yeah, Paul.
The desist part is about going forward. You agree not to reenact the bad behavior or start it up again. The cease is the stopping. The desist is the agree to not restart.
Well, and I just looked it up. I just looked up cease, and the definition for that was bring or come to an end. And then I looked up desist, and the definition for that was cease.
Yeah. cease.
I thought you were going to say there was a picture of us. Yeah. I looked up cease, and then I got desist, and then picture of the Dan Patrick Show came up. This day in sports history, Paulie?
It's an audio version trying to keep up with Fritzy. 7 years ago today, Seattle 23, San Francisco 17. In the playoffs, you remember Michael Crabtree was a high-end receiver for San Francisco.
Yep.
Here's Richard Sherman being interviewed after the game.
Let's send you down to the field and Aaron Andrews.
Joe, thank you so much. Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm gonna shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
All right, before... And Joe, back over to you.
All right, well, we saw.
He was gone for the interview. Yes, Todd.
Who was talking about you? Crabtree.
She asked about the play. He's like, walk me through the play. I'm the best ever.
Yeah.
I was at the play. He became a household name that day. He was cooking.
Well, he did with that, and then Brady, you know, what did he say? Something, bro?
You mad, bro?
You mad, bro? That one went viral, as the kids like to say as well. You mad? That's where I watched this after the Patriots beat Seattle in the Super Bowl, after the Malcolm Butler interception. I watched as Brady is on the ground and Richard Sherman walks over, and Brady sits there, and Richard Sherman, I believe, is holding out his hand to help him up, and Brady made him wait and wait. And Richard wasn't taunting, but it felt like Brady was going to take his time here, just for a moment here, as Richard Sherman came over to help Brady up at the end of that game. And I'm probably the only person who's noticing this, because I just thought, where's Sherman? There's Brady. Are they going to, you know, say, hey, great game or whatever it is? And then I see Brady and Richard Sherman. Good stuff. All right. Go around the room. What we learned on the program. Todd, I'm going to start with you.
Chris Webber loved the Pistons and Lions growing up, hated the Bulls, also hated Dick Stockton because it reminded him of Celtics growing up.
That's so good. That you hear that voice and you go, nah, this isn't good. We always lose when Dick Stockton's calling the game. McLovin?
Josh Norman says his alma mater, Coastal Carolina, should play Alabama in the Clash of the Titans.
Yes, they should. Let's get it done. Seton.
Josh Norman is still adjusting to meme life.
Yeah, the Derrick Henry stiff arm. Paulie?
Josh Norman has a serious pickup truck.
What We Learned brought to you by M-Drive, powerful ingredients, the supplement I take every day, backed by science, help you get energized, stronger, leaner. Go to mdrivedan.com. Free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't let age beat you. Refind your prime with M-Drive. Thanks for the phone calls, emails, tweets, all-around support. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on The Dan Patrick Show. One more item as we close out the show, and we go the extra mile here. So does Mercedes-Benz. In fact, they're the ones that go the extra mile. A variety of vans, like the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van, the versatile Mercedes-Benz Metris, and you can find out what that extra mile really feels like and looks like with Mercedes-Benz. They have blind spot assist, active lane keeping assist, MBUX, voice command technology. That's for directions, weather forecast, comfort control, and more. You can get your very own tricked out Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. You could win by entering Fox Sports Radio's ultimate tailgate rig sweepstakes. Go to foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com. Enter, get official rules for a chance to win that Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. It's equipped with TVs. It's got an awning that comes out. There's a wood pellet grill, sound system, got light show inside. It's great. All the details, foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com. Sweepstakes end January 24th. Mercedes-Benz vans, some equipment described, is optional.